Well, listen, we're here to talk about the King Biscuit record.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just kind of touch on that a little bit. I wanted to refresh your memory a little bit, if it needs to be. I suppose this kind of hinges on the live record that came out in England, came out in Europe. And when you went over there and played Castle Donington, you surprised a lot of people.
Right.
More than anything, you surprised the kids, because it was raining like crazy. And
right.
yet Blackfoot came out and played not only a full set, but really marched through with a lot of gusto.
Yeah.
I think that was a major turning point, brought a lot of fans to your side. Do you remember that day?
Yeah, I remember that. Actually, I remember that day very well. We it was kind of interesting because we knew we were going over here to, you know, going over, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken too, I believe this was toward like the very beginning of the whole Castle Donington fair.
Right, it's 1981.
And what was really interesting about this whole thing is that the band, first of all, we had already been. See, what ended up happening was is the Scorpions had come over in 79 and had opened a series of, a lot of shows for Nugent and us. See, we toured with Nugent quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we did a whole thing with him in 79. And actually, what happened was the Scorpions went back from that tour and had us to come over and play a lot of the dates with them right after we had finished touring together. So we actually went over way before the Castle Donington thing, and it all culminated. I tell you, it was kind of an interesting thing because the Tomcat album had just come out in 80, and actually that was the album that we were actually touring on, and we went over there, and it's kind of interesting because everybody was just starting to hear the band at the time. And we went over, and our whole goal was, really to go out and kick major butt, and really show those people over there, because this was the first chance we'd had a chance to go over and really play for European audiences. And we'd already heard how, we had heard how European audiences were very critical of bands and very uncompromising, And we went over there and said, hey, we faced a lot of things before. Let's go over there and show these people that we really know what we're doing and really got it something on the ball. And let's go over there and take this thing over, Well, that was our whole thing was a take no prisoner attitude, and that's what we ended up doing. And then all of a sudden what happened was is everywhere we went, we would go out on stage and we would start our thing. And by about the second or third song, these people really, would really realize that the band was very, very serious doing what we were doing, and we were winning crowds over like that. So then when it came around that we came back to the Donington Festival, the stage was set. And when we took the stage that day, I'll never forget, somebody had said, you are the guys that all eyes are on, because you're, supposedly you're going to be the Darlingtons of this, the darlings of this festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out, and I remember, we were on it so well that day. The band was so together and was clicking so well together that day that you just couldn't deny it. And I remember the band, when we finished the show, we all looked at each other, and we knew we had it. We knew that we had probably done as well, if not better, than anybody that was going to be on that show that day,
right,
including AC/DC, which, they were the ones that were actually headlining the festival that day.
Uh-huh.
And we were primed and ready to go, and then all of a sudden, we got the word, that, boy, we had really did the job, because then the press had come out that Blackfoot was really the darlings of, the Donington Festival, that they had really come over and smoked and blown a lot of people away, and so we knew we did what we set out to do.
Well, I think it won a lot of fans, not only in the crowd, but also on stage. Didn't Iron Maiden have you guys show up for a...
Well, it was really interesting. We did some touring with Iron Maiden before we ever played Reading with them. In fact, we played the Reading Festival with them. And I remember that my dad, Shorty, was supposed to go over to the Reading Festival with us, and he had already got his passport and was primed and ready to go, and then he took sick, and consequently was put in the hospital and passed away, you know, that year. And, you know, it would have been pandemonium if he'd have went, because everybody had heard of this guy for so long.
Right.
And
credited on every record.
Oh, yeah, and had played such a, you know, such a role in the band, which, you know, which was kind of a cool twist of things. I mean, all of a sudden you had this older kind of a bluegrass guy play, you know, writing these songs that a rock band had taken and kind of turned around, you know. And it was kind of weird because people had heard of this guy over there, but they had never got to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we thought what would be a really a cool thing to do is he had played a lot of shows with us. He would go out and he would play some of the shows and play Fox Chase with us and Train and stuff like that, and Rattlesnake Rock and Roller, you know, from the Marauder album and things. And he would go out and at the very, you know, at some point in the show, I would bring him out and introduce him as the world's oldest rock star, you know. And this guy would come out, and the people just literally, absolutely just loved him. I mean, it was very weird to see, you know, this older guy around 70, you know, walk out with his instruments and come out and jump around on stage when the band was starting to the song. He'd stay out on the stage with us and just, you know, go through the whole bit with us, you know. And it was a treat to watch him. I remember one of the very last shows that he ever did with us was in Atlanta at the Omni. And I can remember introducing him, and he come walking out, you know. And the crowd was so loud at that point. I recall that they had to take and shut the mains down, the PA. Out front, they had to bring the mains down because the crowd was so loud it was coming through the PA and just, you know, making it just that much worse. And he started the song probably four or five times and never really could get into tune, because every time he'd start the song, the crowd would just get loud again.
Couldn't hear himself.
So finally, I can remember being on stage with him, and he asked me, he goes, what am I supposed to do? And I said, just start it and just keep playing it, you know. So he started it and he kept playing it, and they kept being loud and loud and loud, and finally we got into the song and stuff, and he stayed right out on the stage with us and would buck dance to the songs and ham it up with the audience and stuff like that. And he was just, it was so magical, you know, it was just perfect.
It sounds like you still miss him.
Yeah, I do. I mean, he was very, you know, he played such a big role in my life. I mean, if it hadn't have actually been for him, I would have stood a chance, first of all, in life, because my grandparents actually, you know, he and his wife was actually my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And so what really, they adopted me, you know, when I was quite small and raised me, you know, as a child and as their own, basically their own son. And they really were my parents. And, you know, my whole family had at one point or other had been involved in music and, you know, had played music to a certain degree. My mother, my parental mother, she actually was a singer and was a very, very good singer, as a matter of fact. Came close in her life doing it as a career and came very close of really getting something going. As a matter of fact, my youngest brother and my oldest sister, they both play. So, but nobody ever really quite, you know, I went after it in a different way. I mean, I went after it in a professional way because that's all I ever wanted to do, really. And it just so happened that, you know, that it worked out for me. It just so happened that I have had success with actually two of the South's probably biggest bands, you know, especially, you know, with Lynyrd Skynyrd and Blackfoot. And some people never get a chance to really to actually do it with one, much less, you know, like a couple. So really, to be honest, and in all fairness, I really feel blessed, you know, in that way. That, I mean, somebody smiled down upon me somewhere to give me that opportunity to be able to do it with, you know, two different bands. And also to have been involved in, probably been involved with, some of the most talented people that I could ever imagine. I mean, you know, I was very lucky and very fortunate to be able to share the stage with, you know, some very talented guys. And to this day, they still are, you know, from what I understand. So it's like, I really, you know, I look back on all that stuff, and I mean, sure, you've always, you know, there's always points of some things that you have a little bit of regrets about, but really for the most part of it, there's none, because, you know, some of the things that you've gone through and that you've done and been able to handle and stuff like that really builds, you know, makes you what you are and builds character, you know. And I just, you know, in looking back on all this stuff, there's a long history, and I really feel fortunate to have been a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were over in England and you were starting to really establish this huge fan base that was starting to develop around the Blackfoot camp, one particular album kind of rose to the surface, and that became the Highway Song live record,
right?
Which you only released in England at the time.
Well, actually, it was released throughout Europe, and what happened was, we were rehearsing. As a matter of fact, we were rehearsing in Florida. Our bass player Greg, he had this friend of his family's who had loaned us this house on the Suwannee River. And we were actually already writing for another record. And we were getting ready, you know, the buses had come and dropped us off at this place, and the equipment mm-hmm. trucks had dropped our equipment off, and we had basically had started getting ready for a new record. We had started to pin some things and do it, and all of a sudden I got a call from our management saying that we had been offered you know, a full headlining tour over in Europe, and that they wanted the European side of the record company wanted to do a live record with the Rolling Stones mobile unit, and so we kind of put a halt to, you know, to doing, you know, the next record. And we said, okay, let's go ahead and explore the possibilities of going over and doing a live record. So it was tossed around for a little while, and finally the decision was made that we would go over. What ended up coming down with that whole thing is a dispute happened between the American side of the label and the European side of the label. The American side didn't want us to go over. The European side wanted us to come back over because the popularity was building so strong that the band could go over and headline its own dates and probably do all sold-out shows. And so, you know, all of a sudden it got to be this struggle between the two labels, you know, the two the one prospective label, which was Atlantic, you know,
mm-hmm.
but or WBA,
well, Echo.
Or
yeah.
Echo. But it was the two different sides. One was in the American side and one was the European side. And there got to be a real struggle there. And they didn't want us to go over here. You know, they wanted us to continue to do what we were doing, wanted us to get a new studio record ready because it was time, you know. As for myself, I was like, you know, what can you say when you're an artist and you're caught in the middle
of a feud like that, exactly.
Two heads of record companies, you know? So we just basically went with the flow. Well, we went over and we headlined and we did the recording and so forth and so on. And to be honest with you, I really felt like going over and doing that live record was really a way of saying thank you to, you know, to the European audiences and stuff that we had played for and people that had come to really love the band so much. I really felt like it was actually giving thanks to people, you know.
Well, you took most of the record from the Hammersmith, the sold-out Hammersmith show.
Some of it was from Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it was, you know, was from other different dates. But the most part of it, you're right, was from Hammersmith, the dates that we played there. And I got to tell you, you know, at that time, you know, the Hammersmith Odeon was such an unbelievably well-known place to play. I mean, it was basically like the American Fillmore, you know what I mean? It was like the Fillmore of Europe. Everybody wanted to play it. Anybody who was anybody had played Hammersmith Odeon. It was a perfect hall. The acoustics were just incredible. And just, you know, it was just this prestigious thing other than, you know, Royal Albert Hall. It was the prestige of playing this beautiful theater And then all of a sudden we had a chance to record live tracks from it to be able to put out on a live record. Well, we did the recording. We had some very, very good nights. I mean, the one thing that I could always say about Jackson and Greg and Charlie, you know, and myself, we tried to always be very, very consistent, no matter what, no matter what the odds, no matter how bad anybody felt, whatever. And we were so in tune at the time that anybody that was, you know, was having a bad night, the other three, you know, would pick up the slack for the, you know, that person, you know what I mean?
Kind of fill in the holes.
And which was really just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing they always knew is that we knew we could count on each other. I mean, we were that in tune with one another. We had played together since early years, since like 1969, you know, and then, you know, had played together for so long. We knew each other so well. I mean, it was just uncanny. I mean, we could change things up in the middle of a show and everybody could follow it. It wasn't one of these things where we got really scared if Jackson wanted to throw in an extra thing here and there, that it wasn't one of these things where Greg wasn't afraid he couldn't catch it, because he was right with him. He was right with Jackson all the time, you know. It wasn't one of these things that if vocally, if I wanted to change something up or whatever, that the band would be really afraid to do it because they could catch it. Or the same goes with, you know, anybody else. I mean, it was just really amazing. So when we went over there, you know, we played these shows. We were fine tuned, well oiled. We were ready to go. I mean, and it was like, you know, we had our senses, our, you know, our mental attitude was on stun, and that's what we did. You know, we went over there just with that attitude.
That's a Nugent phrase.
Oh yeah, you know, and I mean, it was an exciting time.